Well, again, good morning to you guys that are here in the room and to those that are watching via Facebook Live. Say hello to everyone. And then before we move into the sermon, just again, I'd like to say thank you to all of those who have been extremely generous to Laura Lee and I. And I just want to greatly appreciate it. Not only have we gone through the whole summer vacation thing, as we have called it, and you guys have been there for us. But then with Pastor Appreciation Month this past month, a lot of you guys reached out and generously gave us gifts and gift cards and all of that and through the offering. So I just wanted to tell you, thank you very much for that. And so Laura Lee might be getting some cards to you. That's kind of her thing, not mine. I just say thank you in one fell swoop. All right, thank you. Yeah, no hugging. Yeah, that was my Bitmoji, but that was not my application. So, that's right. Anyway, this morning we're going to dive back into the book of Ecclesiastes. It's what we started last week, a series we're going to be doing for 4 weeks. And last week I spent some time just kind of laying a foundation, giving you a little bit of background on it, and we're going to be taking a look at a few different things. So again, Ecclesiastes is part of the wisdom literature that's contained in the Bible. And today, we're going to consider the first of three themes of emphasis that are found in the book. And so today we're going to be considering time. Time, something that we all is relevant to our lives. Did we not set our clocks back? Or, you know, our devices set them back for us, but, right? So time is of the essence of the issue. So I want to ask you, do you have the time? Where did the time go? Have a good time. Just in the nick of time. I'm almost out of time. Time is money. We kill time. We save time. We spend time. But we shouldn't waste time. We really should invest time. We rob and we get robbed of time. We lost time and yet we have all the time in the world. Although we may manage time, no one of us is powerful enough to stop the march of time or even slow it down. You and I cannot control time. So we're going to talk about time today, if you haven't figured it out, right? So I was thinking about that slowing down time thing, but I don't know. You know, I think we do wrestle with that, you know, and maybe this is changing. I think it's something that I've noticed, women wrestling, maybe struggling with a little bit more than men, trying to slow down time. You know, and it works out well till somebody looks like a feline. And then you know it's gone too far, right? All right, some of you will catch that later. Some of you are quick enough to figure that out now. Somebody's going like this right now. No, I don't know. Just one of those things. I kind of go, wow, that looked good until it didn't. anyway, but we all wrestle with time, right? And we just know that we can't control it, right? That's a big deal. In the words of the teacher, that is presumed by many to be King Solomon, he said it this way. He said, Hevel, Hevel, everything is utterly Hevel. But I hope that I brought some clarification last week that what he meant was he did not mean that life is meaningless. Life is not without meaning. However, it is Hevel in that it is fragile. It is temporary. Life is fleeting like fog, vapor, or smoke, which is what that Hebrew word means. So anyway, let's dive into the text. You'll look in, I've got inside your programs, it'll be on the screen, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 4. So we're going to kind of pick up where we left off last week. We just kind of did the introduction. And really, I think at this particular place, the teacher, we're going to hear the words of the teacher, right? There's the author and there's the teacher. And the author is presenting, he has preserved and presented to us the words of the teacher. Okay? And so the words of the teacher are this. He kind of takes off in verse 4, and he says this: generations come and generations go, but the earth never changes. The sun rises and the sun sets, then hurries around to rise again. The wind blows south and then turns north. Around and around it goes, blowing in circles. Rivers run into the sea, but the sea is never full. Then the water runs again to the rivers and flows out again to the sea. Everything is wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we see, we're never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we're not content. History merely repeats itself. It has all been done before. Nothing under the sun is truly new. Sometimes people say, here's something new, but actually it is old. Nothing is ever truly new. We don't remember what happened in the past, and in future generations, no one will remember what we are doing now. Everybody's excited, right? We just read that, and you're just like, yes! That's what I came to church for this morning. I needed that, right? Okay. So the teacher is sharing with, he's kind of dealing with the idea, the sands of time, right? You know, the sands of time cannot be stopped, right? And the sands of time may eventually cover or even erase our existence. Now, you know where the term or where this little phrase comes from, right? The sands of time. Some of you maybe have had one of these or you've seen it at grandma's house, right? And that's like the hourglass, right? And it has the sand that goes through it. It's a finite amount of sand that pours through, and it's usually like a 1 hour or 30 minutes, depending on what it is. And it's the hour clock, and you can turn it over and start it again. You can even try, if you want to lay it on its side, you know, because I know some people think, oh, well, but you can't stop time. You may be able to stop the sand from pouring, but you can't stop time, right? And that's where it kind of comes from. The sands of time. Now, in some places, this isn't just metaphoric or drawing from that imagery, but in some places, the sands of time is actually literal, that the sands of time actually cover stuff up. If you were to go in the Middle East or you go into the land of the Bible, you'll encounter all kinds of archaeological digs. And, you know, when they discover places, you know, they have to dig down. It's amazing that the sands of time, sentiment, right, soil, covers over. And sometimes it can erase the entire existence of villages, towns, cities. In fact, they have hills that you'll see all over the place that are known as tells. And these tells, it's amazing what we do. You know, a civilization, we have a tendency, like one civilization will rise and they'll live in a spot for 150, 200 years. And then another power will come and they'll rise and they'll build in the same spot, right? Sometimes right on top of the same place, and then they'll exist for 400 years. Then another regime will come along and they'll move into the place and they'll live for another 150 years, and they build on one another and the sands of time covers it over. And you can have these hills, and once you kind of seen several of them, you begin to recognize when it's not just a natural shape, but you can tell this is it's telling, right? It's a tell, which just is a hill that you know that underneath of there are several civilizations. Well, it does happen there figuratively, but it can happen or literally as well as figuratively, but it happens in our lifetime too. I'll share an example with you in a moment. The march of time progresses forward, and eventually we are forgotten. That's encouraging, exciting, right? Right? Some of you might be going, that's good. There's a lot of things I want people to forget, right? I don't know, right? But we are. And I think we wrestle with that. I think it's kind of hard for us sometimes to embrace that idea. But some of you, as I was reading through that, some of you had some problems with that. You were like, well, I don't know that I agree with that. I'm not sure that these statements are accurate, right? So let me help you in case you were engaged. I'm glad you were engaged, but I hope that you don't get derailed. The teacher is not talking in these verses. He's not dealing with technological development, right? Because there were some of you that were just like, well, there's nothing new. Well, I'm sorry, my iPhone wasn't around a couple hundred years ago, right? So some of you were kind of going there and you were wrestling with that. That's not what the teacher is addressing. He's not addressing technological development. And then there's some of you, maybe you're not a techie person in here, you know, that's not your gig, but you know, you're kind of more, what would be environmentally conscious. And you were like, well, wait a minute. Sun rises, sun sets, but the earth never changes. Well, just to put your mind at ease, the teacher was not trying to address global warming, right? That's none of these things. So long as we understand his context, the teacher is addressing the human experience. See, yeah, technological developments may change and global warming might change some things, but the reality is that the human experience changes very, very little. Do you know 5,000 years ago, there were mothers who loved their sons? Do you know that 4,000 years ago, there were husbands and wives who were arguing over things that weren't that important to begin with, right? Did you know that even 2,000 years ago, there were families that had struggles at holidays? And by the end of the meal, many of them were ready to go, right? It's not new, folks. You know what? We enjoy, we celebrate, we fall in love, we get mad, we get our feelings hurt, we struggle relationships, we don't like our job. Wow, that's not new, right? Whether you're wearing a suit or you're wearing a robe, all of these things have been dealt with before. And that's what the teacher's trying to address here, is that the human experience remains the same. The brevity of human life. In fact, he puts it in there. He says, generations come and generations go. Generations come and generations go. I want to give you an example, a personal example. My children were four and 5 years old when my father passed away. My father lived right around the corner from us. He was a part of their life every week, sometimes multiple times a week, right? So it wasn't like lived a distance away, wasn't, you know, a person that wasn't a part of their life. But he passed away when they were 4 and 5 years old. And when we get together as a family, my father is never mentioned unless Laura Lee or I bring him up. You know why? My kids, who are now getting ready to turn 29 and 30, right? They never talk about him because they simply don't remember him. That's a fact. My kids don't have a poor memory. That's a reality. That was a reality check for me this summer when I was recovering from my bypass surgery. Because I thought, should I depart and not leave the hospital and make it home? My oldest grandchild, Penny, isn't even 4 yet. And it hit me that she's not even going to remember me. Wow. That's sobering. But I don't like that. Okay. That changes everything. It doesn't change anything. Right? Time's marching on. It looked at you and sorry about your luck. Right? It's keeping on rolling. This is just the reality that the teacher is looking at. Generations come, generations go. We'll look back at the text. In chapter 3, as we move forward, chapter 3 in Ecclesiastes kind of really starts to focus on this subject matter of time. And, verses 1 through 8, it's actually a poem. don't know if you knew that. It's actually a poem that became a lyric, right? So the children of the 60s who are among us, right? You're quite familiar, right? Somebody already yelled it out. But if I were to poll those who are under 20 years of age in our midst, and I were to ask you, I'm looking around, some of you, you're not getting away with 20. You thought you were, but you're not going to get away with it. Wow, we really don't have a lot that are under 20. I'll extend it to 30, maybe 30 right in there. You know, a lot of you don't even know the lyric, the song that lyric is from, right? I mean, maybe everybody does. Does everybody know the song that this poem became? Right? Who did it? Oh, well, if you're over 40, you're not allowed to answer. 30. All right, it's the Birds. That's right. So some of you are in here and you thought, I didn't know there was a band named the Birds. Thought that was a, some of you didn't even know there was a movie from Alfred Hitchcock called The Birds. So I was going to go there, but I knew some of you just like zero for zero on both of those. But anyway, right? You're all right. There was a movie. You guys have seen the movie, right? The Birds. Okay. All right. Just checking. Make sure it wasn't out of touch too much, but so let's take a look at this. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, where the first chapter kind of dealt with the sands of time. Now in this third chapter, he's going to deal with the seasons of time, right? And so starting out, verse 1 through 8, you guys have heard this, right? He says, for everything there is a season, a time for every activity under heaven. Now, I do want to tell you two important words right there, both in that one verse, season and time. Those are two totally different words, and they have different meaning. And it'll be important, so I'm going to clue you in now. So this word time that shows up there, it's a word that is going to show up like 39 times in Ecclesiastes, right? And what it means is it's talking about a specific point in time, a specific day, or a specific moment, or a specific event. But the word preceding it, the word season, is a completely different word for time. Season means an appointed time in duration or length. So you have a point in time, an appointed time. They're two different things. A season is appointed for a duration, and then time is simply a moment, an event, a day in potentially a season. That straight? Okay. So here we go. A time, verse 2, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to harvest, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to cry and a time to laugh, a time to grieve and a time to dance. And some of you know that only because of, exactly, Kevin Bacon. That's it, right? That's the only time you ever heard this verse. Some of you were just like, yeah, I remember that. Kevin Bacon, Footloose. That's right. Time to dance. He used that out of context for his benefit. But anyway, okay, back to verse 5. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to turn away. A time to search and a time to quit searching. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be quiet and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. This poem that talks about the seasons of time, it includes seven sets of opposites, right? Kind of suggesting in Hebrew literature a completeness. In other words, these seven opposites that are listed in this poem are encompassing the experience of mankind, right? Because this is what he's talking about. So it doesn't mean that every single person will experience every one of these moments and times, right? Because some of you could go down this list and you go, well, yeah, I got several of these, right? I've had a time I felt like killing somebody, but I didn't, right? I married them. No, I'm just, so, hey, I just threw it out there before you did, because, right, some of you were thinking it. All right, so, no, but here's the thing. The idea is not that he's encompassing every individual's experience, but the collective experience of humanity. That within the experience of humanity, there's going to be a moment, a day, an event that covers every one of these polar opposites across the gambit. However, for everything, there is a season or an appointed time. And so the teacher is kind of hinting to us, suggesting to us about God's providence. That God is governing some of the things that are happening. Somebody could use the word husbandry, right? God is at work determining, right? The seasons and the durations of the seasons that we will experience. So, while there may be appropriate times for all things, as it says in these verses, God is the one who establishes those times. Remember a few weeks I shared with you about the proverb, and how the proverb was impacting me, and so how it says that God, you know, that man, we make our plans, but God determines our steps, right? Anyway, back to this chapter 3. As he continues on, verse 11 through 15, the teacher is going to talk about the seed of time. He mentioned the sands of time in chapter 1, the seasons of time in this poem. But now he's going to talk about the seed of time. Says this, verse 11. Yet God has made everything beautiful for its own time, for its own moment. He has planted eternity in the human heart. But even so, people cannot see the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end. So I concluded there is nothing better than to be happy and enjoy ourselves as long as we can. And people should eat and drink and enjoy the fruits of their labor, for these are gifts from God. And I know that whatever God does is final. Nothing can be added to it or taken from it. God's purpose is that people should fear him. That's not really popular today. Truth isn't either, but verse 15. What is happening now has happened before, and what will happen in the future has happened before, because God makes the same things happen over and over again. Everything is beautiful. Even the difficult times can have a beauty to them if we are embracing them through God and trusting him that they are approaching and they're happening in their time. The seed of time, and what I mean by that, this seed of eternity has been planted within humanity by God. That actually should be pretty exciting to us. I don't know if you've ever even stopped and thought about that concept, that God has planted eternity in the human heart, within us. Do you realize that means that you and I, we have the capacity for eternal things? We have the capacity for eternal things because that's how we were originally created. And he placed that inside of us. It's because of that little thing being placed there, that seed of time, that we struggle with a lot of things. We wrestle, right? We know something's missing. Something ain't right. There's got to be more to this, right? I don't care how spiritual or lack thereof someone is. Most everyone in the human race, somewhere during their little breath on this planet, wrestles with that thought, that question. Man, are you telling me this is it? This can't be all there is. There's got to be more to this. I think these are questions that we wrestle with, we struggle, we wonder, and we ask. And there's no doubt. It's no wonder. God put that in there. God put that in us so that we would be searching for the answer. Humanity suspects that there is something more because God planted that deep secret deep in our psyche. And so even if we can't articulate it, even if we can't wrap our mind around it, even if we can't put our finger on it, we're searching for it. We're wondering about it. We're wrestling with it. I'm going to get theological on you for a second. Right? Did you realize that this whole thing right here demonstrates God's prevenient grace? Right? Some of you are going, man, I don't even know what you just said. Right? It's one of those $5 words that's not worth much. Right? Because we don't use it in everyday language. Prevenient grace, God's prevenient grace. You know what that is, right? Have no clue, most folks, right? Unless you've been tested on it. So here's the idea. Here's the thought. You've heard me say before that God is always the initiator. We are merely the responders, right? And that really is another way of talking about God's prevenient grace. The idea of God's prevenient grace is the grace that came before, the grace that precedes, all right? Which goes back to my idea. God is always the initiator. We're always the responder. Let me kind of share it with you like this. In the beginning, right, Genesis, God created them in his image. Right? We've been created in the divine image. And part of the divine image is you and I have been endowed with moral responsibility. You know what that means? Simply means you have the ability. You have the ability to choose right from wrong. Right? God gave us that in the beginning because he wanted to create us in his image. We have all kinds of divine attributes. The ability to create, to imagine. These are all divine attributes that God gave us in the beginning because we're made in his image. But we know how the story goes, right? That woman you gave me, she grabbed that apple, man. She messed it all up. Right? That's why they call her evil. I mean, Eve, it's short for evil. Sorry. No, that's not where it comes from. But, and it was his fault, not hers anyway. You do know that, right? Guys, before you get excited about it, she was deceived. You were just stupid. Right? The woman was deceived, and the man just sat there and went, yeah. Right? And he was morally responsible for it. And since that time, sin entered in, and then man became depraved. Another big word. All that means, really, is that man came to a place where he was no longer under his own steam, under his own initiative or natural strength. Did he possess the ability to turn toward God and pursue him? So what did God do? Him being the initiator, he extended his grace toward us. And he began to pursue us so that we might pursue him. Our pursuit of him is something we can't even do in our own strength. It has to be initiated by he and his presence and his spirit. And one of the ways he did it is he dropped a little seed of eternity deep in our hearts so that we would wonder Is this all there is? There's got to be more to this. He placed that seed there so that he could nurture it and he could water it. And he would present himself to us and still give us the ability, the moral responsibility to choose. See, we respond either in the affirmative or the negative. We either accept him or reject him. But he's the initiator and we're the responders. So, Ecclesiastes. This book is not trying to serve as an intellectual ban on planning ahead. Because I want to put that out, because I know some of you, I know there's probably a handful of you that are actually reading through this with us as we go along. You know, and you can kind of read this thing, and as you read through it, you can kind of go, what the heck? You know, you just throw it up, and man, I don't know why we plan to do anything, right? That's not what this is doing. Ecclesiastes is not trying to put an intellectual ban on planning ahead. What the teacher recognizes and he's sharing with us is his inability to command time. And he realizes that life is temporary, that life is fleeting, and that life is fragile. Utterly hevel. The author and the teacher recognize that we must embrace, and hear me on this, we must embrace each day with gratitude. Realizing that it is a gift from God. Do you know that that's probably one of the biggest things that we just take for granted? How many of us woke up this morning, drew a breath, and never gave a second thought of saying, thank you, Lord, that you've given me another day. Because nobody owes you this day. Truth be told, you're stealing it. Because you don't deserve it. But then again, that's his initiative effort toward us and his love. You know, this is a thought that didn't just end in the Old Testament. This I don't have on the screen or in your programs, but just interesting that, you know, throughout Scripture, this thought. James 4:14, another book that really handles a lot of practical stuff. James 4:14 says this: how do you know what your life will be like tomorrow? Your life is like the morning fog. The word in the Greek there for fog, it means vapor or smoke. That's interesting. It says your life is like morning fog. It's here a little while, and then it's gone. So it's not just an Old Testament concept. See, some of us, I think we struggle with Ecclesiastes and this book, and some of you, honestly, if you've been reading or you've started even thinking about this or reading along, you know, you and I have an advantage and a disadvantage. When we read this book, we can struggle with it because we stand at a different point in time from where the teacher and the author stood, right? They were at a point in time when the words were penned and the words were preserved and presented. And here we are now reading it at another point in time. And you and I have the advantage of knowing about things and being able to look back on things that the author and the teacher never even knew about. But for a second, we can't disregard the wisdom that this book contains because it is relevant. See, you and I stand on this side of the birth, the life and ministry, the crucifixion, the death, the resurrection of the Messiah, of Jesus Christ. But you know what? We're still like him. Right? We've had, the eternity has been placed inside of our heart, and yet you and I, even though we have the advantage of thousands of years from the teacher, we still can't see the beginning and the end. We have it written out for us, and we struggle with it. But you and I can't see between now and then, right? Even if you're here and you're a follower of Christ and you've accepted the revelation and you know how the game ends and we win and all that good stuff, right? And you go rah, rah, rah around your church friends. But we don't know how it is between now and then, right? And we got to get through all those tomorrows. We can't see the beginning from the end. No different than he couldn't see the beginning from the end. But one thing we can say for certain is that you and I don't possess the ability to control time. Some of us do better managing it than others, but none of us can control it. And that's what the teacher wants us to understand. Life is not without meaning. But he wants us to recognize those things like time that are out of our control. You and I need to enjoy the moment. How many of us spend so much time worrying about the past and dreaming about the future that the moment that is right in front of us, we can't even stop and enjoy? And the day you've been given today is a gift from God. We should live it well and joyfully. It's not a self-serving, self-gratification thing. This isn't about, man, eat, drink, and be merry. Because some people read this book and they confuse it and think it's Epicureanism, right? Eat, drink, be merry. No. He's saying enjoy food, enjoy drink, enjoy the fruits of your labor. Because they're gifts from God. Right? They're gifts from God. So you and I need to live life full. We need to enjoy the moment joyfully because we're living it for his praise and his glory.